This episode was recorded on the 2nd of September. We would like to reflect on the great personal sadness we feel at the passing of our sovereign, Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II.
The beacon of light in which we rallied to for 70 years has, on the 6th of September, come to an end. James and I, along with our nation, are left in complete sorrow, but with the joyful knowledge that Her Majesty is with her rock once again.
Thank you for your service, dedication and leadership. Long live the King.
Welcome back.
Thanks for joining us for another episode.
I am Malcolm Childs.
And I am James Skiffins, and we are Just Making Conversation,
where we discuss the ins and outs of the model-making hobby that brings us joy and pain in equal measures.
From the greasy sprues to the gloss coats and everything in between, we're going to just be making conversation. Remember, there are other podcasts you can listen to.
Plastic Model Mojo.
The Scale Model Podcast.
Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
Model Geeks.
The Sprue Cutters Union.
Small Subjects.
Built Sideways.
Model by Garpone.
Excellent. Head for modelpodcast.com for all the links.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, consider leaving a review or 5 stars, as it promotes this podcast to more people to enjoy.
Showing your support to us is easy as making a coffee. In fact, why not go over to buymeacoffee.com /JMC podcast and do just that. Your support will help go towards making this podcast and its contents just that little bit better.
In this here episode, we will be just making conversation about modelling workspaces, discussing the ideal area for you to create those masterpieces.
Having the right environment for you to be able to make your kits or inspired creations helps your workflow and the ability to be stress-free.
What do you need to hand to aid you in the production line? When is your space too small or too big? Let's kick off this episode with going through some of your comments that you've left for us, mostly on Facebook, some on Insta, some direct messages, some delivered by semaphore.
Not forgetting those pigeons.
Smoke signals.
So we'll head straight over to Instagram, and Neil, he made a comment in relation to a picture we posted up in relation to our day release, and he said, oh no. The window lickers are out on tour. Yep, we were.
We didn't lick any windows.
No, didn't. You were very well controlled, actually. I didn't have to hold you back too much from licking anything, apart from ice cream.
Yeah, that's true. Wouldn't it be good if they had an ice cream called Windows? Then
you could officially be licking windows, yeah. Anyway, so obviously our last episode was our day release to Duxford, and what a wonderful time we had. Matthew Jones has made a comment in relation to the teaser video that I did for a bit of fun. He says, for that teaser alone, I'm totally adding geeking out at Duxford Imperial War Museum to my bucket list. You all can't have all the fun.
Yeah,
totally right.
Yeah.
And you should.
Well, that's kind of half the point as well, to big up the museum itself. And I hope it came across as somewhere fun to be, because we had a great time. So go and have fun.
Absolutely.
In reference to the last podcast, Books Grenewald put a post up. They said, one day I might be able to visit your museum. I rushed through in 2000, as we only had one day in the UK. Hopefully my ship will come in someday and I will be able to visit. One day is not enough to check out everything there is to see, especially if you go into the restoration hangar and have a chat with the technicians working on the warbirds.
Yeah.
You're right. Absolutely. You need a good long weekend.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So Ian also left a message saying he was there on Saturday, did everywhere, absolutely knackered, plus got lucky as it was flying day, including the BF-109 and the Vampire. So the BF-109 would be the Bouchon 109s. Very nice they are. And a Vampire. lucky so and so.
We saw the Bouchon, didn't we? Taking off and flying around a bit.
We did, yeah. He had a little play.
And we saw the vampire parked up.
Yeah, parked up with its special canopy mask on, ready for being sprayed. Well, no, it was just sat out in the field, but yes, you know what I mean.
No, I would like to have seen that as well. Cool. In reference to the photographs of the Mustang Bee uploaded to our Facebook page, Stefan Ezra Bridal said, "Thanks for sharing. That's my favorite hangar by a long way. So many interesting things to see." You've got to spend a weekend in just that hangar alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I quite agree. Absolutely brilliant fun.
Then also Robert Lane said, "Malcolm, are you going to do yours as this version in the repair hangar? Lots of opportunity for detailing with the advantage of covering cockpit and canopy, though that checkered scheme on the cover would be fun." That version isn't one of the options, is it?
No, it isn't. We have to stick to one of the six options that are available on the Armor Hobby model. And unfortunately, that option is not available. So no, I won't be doing the Burning Express, but you are correct. That checker scheme would indeed be fun. I do think, I haven't got the kit in front of me because it's in my shed, but it's. I think there is a color scheme that does have checkered on it. I think that's on the tail.
There is, yeah.
But that would have a decal for it, I'm pretty sure. But did you notice also the checkered scheme wasn't symmetrical? Did you notice that?
No, I didn't actually.
If you have the inclination or the interest or can be bothered, go and have a look at red and yellow checks on the front of that nose. They're not symmetrical. Around the side, they're slightly different size. I bet that really annoyed the person who was making them. It's like, no one will notice. It doesn't matter. Ken Niles said, also perfect timing, he said, working on the Armor Bee currently. Thanks for these. You're welcome, Ken. Let's know you're getting on, eh?
Yeah, post some pictures up of just how you're getting on with the kit.
Definitely.
And make sure if you come across any little issues or anything that comes up, make sure you drop Malcolm a note and let him know. You made comment about the kit being in the shed. That's a nice segue.
Mm. Yeah, it is. We're going to talk about my shed a lot today, aren't we?
On purpose.
Yeah, we're going to talk about workspaces and your favorite place mm-hmm. to work on your models, where you enjoy making models. Maybe the only place you have to make a model is in a cupboard or on a tea tray on your knees or in a tent or at school or in the truck or somewhere. People tend to have their own little desk or their own little space. Mm-hmm. And they build their paints around them, have their tools and things to hand. And for many, many years, since ever, actually, since I started this hobby, since I was born, I've never had a space like that to call my own.
Yeah, it's a big step, very big step, but it's going to be well worth it. And you're going to go through the differences in your modelling as I've gone through when I created my little space.
Evolving, is it?
Yeah, it's quite exciting to watch someone else go through it. Those of you who are listening, obviously, we'd love to see your workspaces and what you work with. How lucky you are, or how fortunate you are, whichever way you want to look at it. But it's not really about size. It's about the efficiency of your workspace as well.
It's not how big it is. It's what you do with that space, how you utilize that space. How, if you have all your bits and pieces close by as well. We talk about, in the intro, we talked about workflow and production line.
Mm.
And I think that's important because you do want to kind of come out of that mindset when you're modeling, you're kind of in that deep zone. It's nice to have all the bits and pieces right next to you, and you don't have to go and rummage around a drawer to find your special photo etch pliers or you know, find your PVA glue. I knew it was around here somewhere, to find it in your daughter's bedroom because she's been doing a craft project. Anyway, memories.
No bitterness in that comment.
So it's nice to have all those bits and pieces together. I wonder if that's why people end up being so messy. It's because they're in that zone. They're in that busyness. What do you think?
I think partly you're right. I mean, something in which I've seen just recently is someone that works on a tray, effectively, and they have a little coffee table, for want of a better phrase, a very small mm-hmm. coffee table that you'd have beside your settee, maybe. And that is the person's workspace. But the ingenious thing that I saw, which I've never thought of before, is that even in that sort of space, you can still have a sprue holder. By that, I mean some people are lucky and they have like a rack where they put all their sprues. So you've got A, B, C, D all in line. This person ingeniously took the model out of the box. And what he did is he just cut a couple of lines across the box so the sprues could stand up in the box.
Oh.
So each time they wanted sprue A, they just went to sprue A because it was there, rather than having the box with all the sprues and having to pick them up and move them around all over the place.
Oh.
Yeah, all nice and easy. Really lateral thinking about how to help yourself with your model.
Well, the disadvantage of that is obviously if you want to use it as a box again, you're f***ed.
Well, yeah. I mean, in theory, yes. Bear in mind, these were just little nicks that were taken out of the cardboard box so that the sprue itself could lean across the box and hold and sustain itself, basically. It depends on the size of the sprue and the amount of weight involved. But I just thought that was quite a lot of people will save the box art, maybe. Most people don't even do that. They just throw the whole box away. So why not utilize the box in a way which works for you? And then obviously when you finish doing your little session, you just pick all the sprues up and put them back in the box nicely, put the lid on it.
Mm, I like that idea.
And you're done.
I usually use my box as somewhere to store all the bits and pieces while I'm working on it. So I don't think that would work for me. I've never really built anything that has way too many sprues. Got some projects in the pipe next year probably that do have a lot of sprues, so I might have to do that. But I think labelling them is enough for me.
I mean, you can use a toaster rack. There are lots of kitchen instruments and stuff that you can find, or even
what's a toaster rack?
When you have your toast delivered to your table,
good Lord,
with your boiled egg, then you've obviously got a little rack with four bits of toast, haven't you, right?
You've obviously stayed in different hotels than I have. A toast rack.
Oh, yes. You do know you can even get a soldier rack. So you can have a rack with all your soldiers.
Do you mean like those big industrial toasters they have in hotels that have a conveyor belt?
No. That's not what I mean at all. It's literally a piece of metal, and then you've got some upright bits of metal where you just slide the piece of bread in between the metal uprights.
Right. I'm Googling toast racks.
I don't know if that's what it's called.
Toast. Images of toast. Oh, right. Gotcha. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Toast rack. Guys, if you go Google toast rack, you'll know exactly what James is talking about. I can imagine somebody delivering one of these full of toast with your boiled egg in a very fancy hotel.
Yes.
Not in the Premier Inn.
Then you get that conveyor where you just put it in one end and it falls out the other end.
You don't even get that, mate. You get a brown paper bag with a sandwich in it. That's it.
I've seen them used as sprue racks as well. And of course, you can buy them. You can 3D print them.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that Edmer and Hobbit Zone have sprue racks that you can buy. If you've got the space, that is. If you haven't got the space, what you can do with a sprue rack? You put your toast in it. Oh, what if your wife delivered your model kit with little slits in the box and all the sprues all lined up?
Here you go. Good morning, James. And a little bottle of extra thin.
She probably wouldn't go, here you go, James. She'd just launch it through the door at me. Yeah, so, I mean, there's lots of things like that that can help your workflow. I've even seen people making models in hospitals. And that's quite recent, obviously, with Steve. But I've also seen other people making models in hospitals and doing quite in-depth stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's difficult to have your airbrush in there. It might keep the other patients awake in the ward.
You say that. They do have an oxygen line.
Yeah.
So if you could utilize that, I don't know what the PSI is on it, but you could.
Well, you've got a regulator on it. You can turn it right down.
Let us know in the comments if the PSI of an oxygen machine in a hospital is enough to airbrush.
So get in trouble.
Yes, you're right. I also know somebody who did wild model making.
Oh, now that sounds interesting.
Yeah, they went on holiday. They went to the Lake District and they went camping with their partner. And on one of the trips around one of the villages, they found a hobby shop. So the chap, being a model maker, bought a Mitsubishi Zero
on
72nd scale and thought,
oh, I know what I could do this evening. I'll try and build it.
Sat on a rock, used the things in the kit, used a penknife to take the sprues apart and glue it together. And he actually took a photograph of it on the rock where he made it. It looked pretty good, pretty decent, I would say. And that did get me thinking, like, the idea of wild modelling would be quite fun. to go and build the model of the thing in the place that it is. In the middle of an airfield. Right, build a Spitfire under the shadow of this Spitfire.
Well, that would be quite cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You could have done that at Duxford. You could have sat there and done a P-51. The fuselage of the one in the hangar.
I think we were on bought time already. I don't think they would have allowed that.
Yeah, I think so. Just goes to show, if you put your mind to it, you can do the hobby anywhere.
I guess so, almost. And you could, I think you'd struggle underwater, sat on a volcano. I think you would possibly struggle in space. Although I might be wrong.
I tell you what, that's a great challenge, though, isn't it, for the next mission? We want to see if Extra Thin works in space.
Come on, NASA, I know you're listening.
Do you know, I might email them and ask them.
I know you would.
Dear NASA, my name's James Giffins. I am from Just Making Conversation podcast. You've probably heard of us.
On your next mission, if it's not too much trouble, would it be appropriate for us to stick a model kit in there and then you can build it while you're flying about in space?
Oh, no, that would be cool, wouldn't it? Anyway, the space is what you make of it at the end of the day. And in the intro, we did allude to what size is right. Is it too big or too small? Now, you did say, can it ever be too big? And I think the answer is yes.
Really?
I think there is a finite size. Now, I'm probably going to get shot down by a few people that have got large model areas.
Yeah.
But if you have enough space, like my room here, for example, I've got enough space to have an area to make my models. Mm-hmm. I've got an area to my side where I can paint my models in the spray booth. But technically, I have actually got enough room in here to have three or four people sat in here making models if I wanted to and if I had any friends.
Mm.
So I have an area behind me that is dedicated, in theory, to scratch building and having an area where all the dust would be, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So playing with balsa wood and cork and all that sort of stuff. I never use it.
Oh.
I always use the bench that I'm at right now.
Okay.
At the point I'm at on the bench.
Well, that's probably because you're also on the computer chatting to people and that's where you are right now. You know, you're right in front of the computer as well. If you were to turn around and, you know, put your back to me, then one, it wouldn't be a very good podcast because I wouldn't be able to hear you. Well, actually, it might make it better.
Yeah, it might make better. You're right.
But also, when you're modelling, you also have the computer there and you're, you know, kind of interacting with both, aren't you? So,
yeah, that's part of what I was alluding to, was the fact that the hobby itself can be quite insular, as we've mentioned quite a few times. But with the joy of the internet and other things like that, you can effectively have a club night every night by hanging out with a few people and having a chat.
Mm.
So if you've got the ability to have a screen, stroke camera, stroke whatever, that moves around your workspace, then yeah, it can be as big as you like.
Yeah.
But obviously most people have a computer that's stuck in one place and a camera and a mic in a certain place. So the majority of the work will carry out that way because you'll be in a social bubble.
You're able to display a lot of your work in your space too, aren't you? As well as model kits that I can see in your space from what I can see of your space. You've got display space, you've got model kits, you've got tools, you've got paints, you've got the airbrush buff. You've got your airbrush booth right there as well. So you've got lots of facets of the hobby all in one place.
I have.
Yeah. And I don't think many people will have that much space. You know, it's usually a small bedroom or a study or a shed.
It's a corner,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
A corner or a shed or something like that. Yeah. And I mean, in fairness, the size of this room is probably no bigger than your shed. It's just that's the way I've worked it out.
Mm.
And also, not because my wonderful partner isn't supportive, she is, but we're not in a position where she would really want all my models displayed around the house. So I try to keep my hobby contained within this room. Everything to do with the hobby is in here or in storage.
In the loft?
In storage. A very dedicated space that's, yeah, the loft. So, yeah, I'm fortunate in that respect. Going back on myself a little bit of what I've said earlier, I would love the space to be bigger, but it scares me if it was bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would feel it.
Well, yeah, I mean, imagine though if you had the space just to be able to have all your kits there from the loft, bring them down, stick them in the space there, and you had space to display all the work that you've been doing. You wouldn't have to be at that space all the time. It'd be nice. It'd be a nice backdrop for you.
Definitely. I mean, displaying the models is the main thing for me. The stuff I've got, I'm fortunate in that I've got a layout which has lots of drawers and places to hide and bits and pieces and tools. And the only thing, in fact, the only thing in which I'm lacking in is wall space because it's already busy. And the reason for that is I've got a little bit of artwork in which I'd love to be able to have up in here. But the only place I can stick it is on the ceiling. And I'm scared that if I put it on the ceiling, it's going to fall down and hit me on the head. Because I'm not very good with DIY.
Well, it won't damage anything if it does.
No.
Well, you can certainly do that. I have seen sheds and they've got all their paintings and stuff on their roof, you know, facing downwards. I'm sure there is a way of doing it. But
I could do it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the easiest place or the most respectful place to put some artwork because it's not designed to be craned up at, is it?
No. But yeah, so going back to the main subject, which is the space, we sort of alluded to small and large areas. But what do you think is the minimal space you need or the ideal space for one of the
minimal
phrase?
Is probably a lap.
Mm-hmm.
I've stored sprues in my mouth before because I knew that I was using it a lot. So I actually had the sprue in my mouth while I was working or the paintbrush. Not the actual model or any sort of toxic substances. Sound like one of those fish.
Yeah.
You know, that look after their young. I didn't have much space in the past. And so I'd have to utilize, you know, the height rather than the space. So I'd have things up on shelves and shelves and shelves and stack things up or things on the floor. That was how I worked for quite a while. I had a plastic box that I was allowed to use. And the lid of that was my tray on my knees in front of EastEnders. If I had anything that didn't fit in that box, then I didn't have it.
Mm.
And that's when I had little young kids running around. So when, you know, little fingers and things, they're very interested in shiny paint, aren't they? So mm-hmm. I had to keep it on a box sealed away from them. But now, of course, they're quite happy to steal my glue and my pencils and everything else. Actually, now I've reached that point where I've been doing the hobby so much and it means so much to me that I've invested in my own space.
Mm.
It's quite funny because I had this kind of epiphany today. So for the last 6 months, I've been putting the shed together, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Arrived in April, but before that, I was putting the concrete down. I was planning on, you know, what things I needed inside, what the budget was going to be, how I was going to get internet out there, electricity, all that kind of stuff. So you're researching all this kind of thing. And all I knew that I wanted to do was get some space to do my hobby.
Uh-huh.
Quiet space away from the family, just to sit quietly and do the hobby. Because obviously with the podcast and with the other stuff and other work that I do, I don't get to do much model making, which is ironic. So I wanted some space. And also in the house as well, since COVID, we have changed the way you've used our lounge. It's basically like a study and a dining room and a laundry space and a lounge all at once.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that if I cast my eye across this room, I can see laptops on the dining room table, you know, and that's pretty much how it's been since 2020.
Uh-huh.
So we want to get back to using this space that I'm in now as a dining room. So we'll have the main table here, and then I'll be out of the way with all my stuff. So it means moving all my kits, moving all my paints, moving all my paintbrushes and tools and my computer as well out there into the shed to do that, learning about how to insulate space. And it's not cheap, I tell you.
No.
It's not cheap. It has cost me twice as much as I thought it would.
Uh-huh.
And it's taken longer than I wanted to. Every week I think, oh yeah, I'll be in here next week. I'll be able to record the next podcast from the shed. And it never turns out to be that way. So it's quite frustrating. I'm at the point right now where most of my stuff is out in the shed now.
Uh-huh.
So I've got a worktop. I'll put pictures up, don't worry. I've got a worktop. I've got workspace. It's at the right height that I want. I've got a nice little rug in there. I've got shelves on the walls from wall to wall I've got no pictures up at all because, as you say, that takes up precious space.
Yeah, it does.
But what I found today was I was just sat there. I'd just taken a rest. I sat there on my phone. I was listening to a podcast and I was leaning back on my chair and I was looking out on the garden and the house and I could see my family walking between all the rooms and getting ready for bed, brushing their teeth and things like that. And I thought, this is my space now. I can do, you know, what I like in here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really freeing as well. That was really interesting because I have never felt like that. Like, this is my space just for me.
Special.
Yeah, it is really special. And I was arranging all my kits into, like, these are airplanes. These have got jets. These are propellers. Now, do I arrange my tractors with my tanks or do I keep them separate?
Oh.
I had the space to be able to do it. And I had my Star Wars things and my sci-fi on one side, and then I had my kind of wargaming bolt action figures on another side, and then I was deciding where I was going to put the little baskets of things that I've got, and I've got a load of electronic stuff. And when we do the walnut thing, so I want a box for that. That used to sit under my monitor, which you can't anymore. So I was deciding where everything was going, and it was lovely. Got my airbrush booth in the corner, which extracts directly outside with a little short hose. I've got a cat flap on it. At the moment, I made the hole a little bit too small in the door, so it was easy to do because it's just wood. So I just used the jigsaw, but I put the cat flap on because it's slightly too small. The cat flap's slightly wonky; it won't open from the inside. So currently, it's a cat trap. So they can go in, but they can't get out. So I need to fix that.
Really interesting. You were saying that when you were planning your shed. What were the priorities for you for that space?
A worktop that was high enough for me to stand and sit at.
Okay.
Because I was also going to be building the shelves and building the stuff in there, using it as a building place as well as sitting at it. So I had to be high enough. So I chose a bench that is 34 inches high. So if you whip your tape measures out, people, you'll be able to work out. I'll have my chair cranked to the full on height and it'll be perfect for me. I also, my priority was having light in there, natural light. So it's got four windows across the front that is east facing. So in the evening, I won't have any sunshine, but lots of lights as well. I've got big strip lights right across the top and storage.
Mm.
And it needed to be didn't want it to look like a shed inside. So it's been insulated, it's been boarded. I've painted everything white. There's a white theme going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
I have left the ceiling untouched, so it's apart from the insulation, because the insulation is silver, so it's kind of reflecting the light. I might change that one day. Yeah, I wanted it to look like a comfortable little room, basically.
Yeah.
So I can work out there in all weathers and all temperatures.
With your spray booth,
mm.
what was your thinking about where you were going to put that?
So I wanted that by the door, because when I was spraying in my garage, I would have a little table right by the door so that I could just hoik out my hose out the door and extract the air from where I was. I also benefit from the light as well from the door. So I'm quite used to sitting by the door and airbrushing. And I guess I'm quite used to having that humidity as well. If it's raining, it's going to be humid, obviously. It's water in the air. Clever, aren't I? So I'm quite used to managing that. So if I went to a dry environment, I might struggle a bit. So I've got my airbrush by the door, and it's also close to where I'm modeling. I was always so jealous of people who were able to do a little bit of modeling and go,
oh, that needs to be green. I'll just airbrush it.
And reach across and grab their airbrush and change the color of it and put their airbrush back. And I wanted to be able to do that.
Mm.
That means you have to have your own space if you have a massive extractor in your room.
Mm.
So I've got that now. Oh, well, when I've got all the power and everything sorted, which we'll come to later. But yeah, I've got that now. So I've got an airbrush at one end of the shed, and then I just slide across a meter, and then I'm at my place where the computer and stuff will be. And in between is the build area, which is right in the middle of all the windows. So I'll have all the light and everything. I'm quite excited to show you around. I'll do a little tour with you another day when I've got a bit tidier and a bit more working out there. But yeah, this week I'm going to be putting the internet out there. I've got all the routers set up, got the wires that I need. I borrowed a drill from a mate. So I learned about SDS drills today.
Oh, yes.
Yesterday. I didn't know existed. I didn't realize there was two different types of, or three, or four different types of drill bits until when I bought a big masonry drill from the internet, tried to plug it into my three-pronged combi drill, didn't fit. So why is it? Is it wonky? What's going on? I kept trying it and trying it. I was like, no, it's not going to fit in this. How do you know these things? The only time you learn this DIY stuff is when you mess up.
Yeah, pretty much.
I wish there was like a learn DIY with me from the very beginning, you know. Chapter one, SDS drills.
I think there was such a series from the BBC, but I think it's a little out of date now in relation to the equipment side of it. But it's funny, isn't it? I mean, when I did this room, one of my first initial layouts that I had was fairly similar to what it is now. My main idea was to use furniture that I no longer had had space for.
Right, yeah.
Initially, I had a display cabinet, set of drawers, unit sort of thing. But that was old and falling apart.
Mm.
So I decided to reuse it in this room. But unfortunately, this room, the ceiling height is much lower than my house. So it didn't fit directly in. So I had to saw a bit off and did that and the other.
Yeah.
But then I did that, and then I got a little bit of kitchen worktop, put that in, and sort of muddled along like that for a while. Then I rejigged it and bought some more kitchen top and put kitchen top all the way around the room. Got rid of the display cabinet sort of thing because it was falling apart, and I'd run out of display room. So I then made the shelving unit stroke display unit that I've got. So that was a challenge. Especially as I made it all in the garden, then went to put it in here and realised it was too long to get it through the doorways as a complete unit. So I then had to cut it in half and refix it, which was, yeah, a lot of stress.
Yeah, I bet it was, yeah.
This room has had several different ways in which it's laid out. Generally the same, it's a U-shape. I've got a U-shaped worktop, which is, you know, down both sides and across the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually about to go through another journey.
Oh, you're going to change it around a bit, are you?
Well, not massively. Basically, I've got a corner, the one corner in the room that I've not really jiggled with that much. Has lots of box files on some shelves and is a mess. It's always been the mess part of the room. Yeah, that's going to be rejigged because also the other thing I'm going to do is I'm actually going to make myself a spray booth.
Oh, okay.
So at the moment I've got a portable spray booth, which is vented straight outside. Mm-hmm. It is ample for what I do, absolutely so. But I've got a couple of projects that I want to do at some point, which will be probably in the next 8 months or so. But they're big projects. Yeah, so I need big spray area. Mm-hmm. And also the other downside to the way I designed it is on one wall, I've got lots of electrical sockets and stuff, which is great. But I made it so it was basically in a shelf, if that makes sense. Two pieces of wood, electrical plug or socket, and then obviously a bit of wood on top so it all sticks out from the wall. But unfortunately, that's just created an area for toot. As well as the fact that I can't get my spray booth back far enough on my worktop. So it's right at the edge, which isn't a problem, but it bugs the hell out of me. And with the portable spray booth that I got, you can fold it all down when you're not using it, which I do from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But if I've got it in its erect state, I often knock it with my arm and it annoys the hell out of me.
Right. Yeah.
So, because it's just within swinging distance. This is going really well, this explanation.
Yeah. Okay.
So the plan is to remove that shelf, the little shelf with the sockets, so it can then go backwards a bit. But while I'm doing that, it means I can double the size of the spray booth. That end, I've also got my 3D printer, etc. The wash station is near the window, which is fine until you don't use it for ages and you don't take the fluid out of it, which means the UV from the window sets all the resin in your fluid and then you've got to clean the damn thing out and it's a real pain.
And maybe you can get more storage out of it as well once you've tidied it up.
Well, no, not really.
Well, I mean, you get more space because you'll... I imagine there's things in there that you haven't touched for over a year and you can probably get rid of them.
There will be a little bit of that, but the main thing, the only bit of storage that will be different will be that I have made myself a storage unit out of poster tubes for my long pieces of balsa wood and sterine and all that sort of stuff. And it's very nice design, and it'd be great if it was in a corner of a room, but it's not. It's right on the edge of the desk, and it's something that's a bit of a pain. So when I flip those shelves around 90 degrees onto the other wall, it will give me an area in which I'm going to build a little unit for all of that to go in, and that should be flat up against the wall out the way, which will make a big difference.
What about all the hobby? So you've gone for hobby zone drawers, and haven't you, all the way around?
Yes, most of the drawers and stuff are hobby zone. I do have some EBMA as well, which I like a lot more, if I'm honest. I've gone for lots of storage, and the reason I did that was because on top of the workshop, I've got a bank of drawers that go around the room, and then on top of that, I've got a shelf. Which then gives me the ability to do some bits of modelling or whatever, and I can just pop it up off the desk so I don't knock it over every 5 minutes. And then obviously I've got the ability to have an instructions little thing as well, which I bought recently from EBMA.
It's an instruction
stand. So it's actually, what it actually is, it's an iPad stand is what it is. But I utilize it as an instruction stand. Works both. So you can have your iPad there, and if you're not using it, you put your instructions in front, or you can just put the instructions. And at the moment, I've got about 9 pages of reference material plus 2 instructions. Yeah, it makes it nice and tidy and easy. The only thing for me, personally, is my eyesight's not that good. Having the instructions there is perfect until I need to really focus on something and I need to take it off there and then bring it down, but it's not in the way, so yeah, it does work.
Yeah, it's somewhere that you keep them, you don't lose them as well. yeah but the we're talking about keeping it clean and tidy. Do you have to keep your space tidy to be able to work in there, or can you keep it messy while you're working away?
I personally don't like mess. I generally like to, when I finish doing what I'm doing model making wise and I'm going to bed, I will try and tidy it away as best I can. Bits of models will go back into either the box or whatever. I don't really like leaving things around. However, if I take a picture of the room as it is right now, you'll see that it's not that like that at all. It's been like this for a few weeks and it does drive me nuts.
Isn't it work in progress though?
It is work in progress, but I've got 30 odd barbecue sticks with crocodile clips on with pieces all over the place, prepared, ready to paint, some painted, some part painted, some not painted. So that's all a bit of a muddle. However, that is mostly put in the box. So I've made a little stand for that, which goes in the box.
Yeah.
That's out of the way as such. But right now I've got 1, 2, 3. I've got 3 models on the go in one form or another, plus 3 other things that are reviewing something. So they're on the desk as well.
Right.
I've just been playing with PE for the last week.
Oh, God, yes.
So I have PE bits all over the place. I'm glad to report that I have finished the main part of the PE now.
Hooray.
Which I will put a picture up with this podcast. All of those pieces are actually on corks.
Oh.
So I have got, as it stands at the moment, 15 corks with bits of PE on, and then I have another 10 with bits of the model on. And the reason they're on there is because I put some double-sided tape on top of a cork, put the part on, and then I can paint it. It's like a little paint stand in itself.
Well, it sounds like it's so much, not so much messy, it's just busy.
Really busy at the moment. Yeah, it is a mess. For me, it's a mess.
When I watch your model officer videos, your workspace is in front of you always seems quite tidy, and you're always kind of cleaning your desk, and I have to edit out the swish swish of you wiping your mat. So you're always trying to keep it clean in front of you, you know, where you're working, which is good. But I certainly wouldn't say it was a mess.
Oh no, I'm a nightmare as well with the bit behind me that I don't actually see. The bit that I said, like I said earlier, is the station, if you like, I made for the scratch building. And I was busy doing some PE the other night, and I just stopped and went, that's it, I've got to tidy it. So I had to clean everything behind me, so it was nothing on there at all.
Right.
24 hours later, I've put some other stuff on it. but that's not the point. I did clean it. And the reason for that is that the Helldiver was in the photo booth, which is next to the spray booth.
Yeah.
Which is a fold-up photo booth.
Right.
But I don't like the fact the fold-up photo booth is out because it's getting dusty and dirty.
Mm.
And I want to move it, but I haven't moved it because I've been putting the PE bits in there and taking pictures as I'm going along.
Ah, I see.
There will come a point all of that PE's got to come out. I've got to take a few bits and pieces picture-wise, and then the photo booth will be folded up and put away. Then that'll allow me to bring the Helldiver back over to that side, the other side of the spray booth, and then all of that side will be clean again because I can't have that busy.
The space that you've got is built around the way that you do your hobby. So obviously you, in terms of like social media and YouTube and all that kind of thing, a lot of your space is geared towards making shows and recording your audio, obviously.
It is, yeah.
And lighting it and everything. So what if you weren't doing any of that? Would you have more space? Would you utilize the space differently?
No, I wouldn't have any more space because the microphone, the studio lights and all that sort of stuff, they're not really in a position where they're affecting me as such. The microphone I can just push over to the paint rack, so it's that out of the way. The only thing that would be massively different is right now I've got a Canon M50 over the bench on an arm, and I've also got an iPhone on an arm. And radio mics dangling from all sorts of places and God knows what. None of that would be there if I wasn't doing the YouTube stuff. And the only difference that would make, if I'm honest, means I could move my arms around without worrying about hitting anything. I mean, talking to you right now, you can probably see the camera over the bench. And that's literally because I was recording something 2 hours ago. But I've done that. And that actually has to come off there tonight. And then that'll be pushed up out of the way.
So you've got it so that you can bring it all in and bring it all back again.
The one thing I'd really love to do with this room is I'd actually like, but they're like a studio beam.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there's three pole, they're probably called a studio beam, I don't know.
I think they're called lighting rigs.
Yeah, that's right, a lighting rig.
Yeah.
I'd like that to go straight across from one wall to the other. And then the lights, the mic, the cameras, everything could be on little scissor thingy bobs going up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't have to worry about anything because it'd all be above my head.
It's interesting. I was playing with my own kind of lighting rig today because between my four windows, I've put up aluminium shelf brackets, and that allows me then to slip in a aluminium, another bracket that sticks out that the shelf rests on. So these things are down sort of window sides, if you like. And what I've done is put long ones above me so they're like this, sticking out towards me. But then I can clip lights to it, microphones and cameras and stuff. So that's kind of like my setup. You don't need to spend a lot of money on it. It's just like a shelf, isn't it, really?
No. Oh, no. I even actually went out and bought a shower rail. It wasn't strong enough to hold it in place, unfortunately.
Did you not screw it in?
No, it's just one of those ones at tension. Good idea, but wrong idea. That's possibly something in which I will end up doing at some point. I'll probably end up getting a scaffolding pole or something.
Well, even if you just put two pieces of wood like that, so it made a V, and then you could just drop your pole on top, just two by fours, you know, like this.
Yeah.
On each end, to make sure the same height and everything else. Just drop anything in there, couldn't it?
That's something in which I would really like to resolve, because when I bought the studio lights, I bought, Carl Smith and I were looking at them, and I bought them, Carl bought some, and then we started talking about brackets and stuff. And Cole bought a bracket in which was literally you screw the bracket to the wall and it was just effectively a pole out from the wall,
mm-hmm.
which looked great, worked really well. But the problem I've got in this particular room is I lined it. So it's lined with plasterboard. It has got some 2x1 on the walls to hold that up. And in between it is sound insulation. But the problem is I can't remember exactly where the beams are. So if I go through the plasterboard into the soundproof, it's not going to hold nothing. It's just going to rip the wall down.
Did you put the beams up, the struts, sorry, a certain amount of distance apart, or were they just kind of randomly popped up?
No, no, they were all put out, measured certain distance apart, but I can't remember what the distance was, and I can't figure out exactly where they are in the wall.
Well, you can just drill into it and you'll find out.
Could do. I could make it like Swiss cheese.
That's what I did it when I was putting my TV up in my bedroom on the bracket. I couldn't find the bloody beams. And it was a new build. So I was just like, I'm going to have to just drill a load of holes until I find a beam and then I can find the rest. So
yeah.
I found a beam. My wife went nuts because there were 6 holes in their bloody wall, which was fixed the next day. I drilled a hole and then stuck an Allen key in it to see if I could feel where the beam was.
Mm.
And the time that I couldn't get the Allen key to go in and turn was obviously I'd hit the beam.
Yeah, it's not that important for me. I can cope with what I'm doing and how it is.
And as long as you've got it screwed to one beam, everything else will be fine.
My DIY skills aren't that good.
No more nails then. That's what you need.
I did try that and it just ripped the plasterboard off.
Okay, yeah.
I took part of the wall with it. I mean, great, it stuck to it perfectly, but the wall unfortunately didn't.
You're talking about DIY skills and being straight and cutting stuff and things like that. My shed, nothing is square. Nothing is true at all. Even though I measure it, I check it again. Every single time I go to, right, I'm definitely happy. I'm sure it's the right length. I go into the shed, put it up against the wall or whatever, and it's completely the wrong bloody size. I'd even like say out loud to myself, right, this is 32 inches. I will go outside, I'll measure 32 inches and then cut. And then I'll take the piece in and it's wrong. And I think it might be down to like, I'm forgetting which the top and the bottom is and which piece is supposed to be the piece that's supposed to go in. It was a nightmare. Even when my wife came out, I said, look, this is some sort of magic trickery going on. There's some sort of portal where numbers mean different things here and numbers mean different things there. And I showed her, and then everything was fine, of course. Maybe I was tired and hot.
One of the reasons I said about the fact that my room's gone through a few changes, what I wanted to say is if anyone is in your position and they're thinking about or in the process of making their space for them, my advice would be once you've got your basics that you want, your requirements, so your worktop, storage, etc., just be aware that there is a strong possibility that once you start working in that space, you will figure out different ways of doing things. So don't be afraid of jiggering things around to suit your working flow.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The same as working from a tray. It's no different. It really isn't. There are ways that can make things easier for you. So try and think a little bit outside the box and just be happy with the fact that you will progress in your environment in ways in which will benefit you. And don't be scared to try things out.
When I was putting my paint racks up on the wall in the shed, I was thinking, oh, well, if I'm sitting there, then I want to be able to reach up and grab a paint. Boop. You know, I want to be able to go, boop, like that. Boop. And then I was thinking, well, I don't really use those paints unless I'm airbrushing. So really, they should be over there. Bollocks. And then the way I had the compressor was nowhere near the airbrush booth, which was a bit daft. So I had to change that already. You're right, though. I don't really know how I'm going to put up my clippers and my tape and things like that. I don't really know where they're going to go. And they'll just probably find their natural place.
Yes, they will.
You know, and wherever they sit, I'll then say, well, that's now where they are. And I'll put a box around it and say all the tape can go to that place there. Yeah. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
Even to a degree, if you get a space, a reasonable space, like Mount is about to start on this adventure, and a little bit like myself, I had a similar thing, and I come across these lovely storage things you could buy and all that, and they're great. They're well worth the money.
Is that the Emma stuff or the Hobby Zone stuff? Or
oh, the Hobby Zone and Emma, both of them. They're great stuff. Yeah. But what I found was I bought the Hobby Zone stuff first. Didn't do an awful lot of research into it, if I'm honest. I did a bit, but not a lot. I chose some, and fortunately, I wasn't in a position to buy everything I wanted. So I bought some and tried them out.
Yeah.
And then once I got used to bits and pieces, I suddenly thought, you know what? I'd really like some more. and then had a little bit more research, picked up a few different ones, and then I've moved them around to find the position that works for me best. And now, yes, I am sad enough to be in a situation where I've got little drawers with little labels on saying exactly what's in each drawer.
Yeah.
Because I forget where everything is. Not for anything other than that. I just literally forget, well, where did I put them? I know I put them somewhere safe.
Well, all the drawers look the same, so it makes complete sense to put labels on them.
Yeah. So, and then once I did that, I then wanted something to put my paintbrushes in, and wasn't happy with the drawers that Hobbyzone offered, and came across EBMA, and was delighted because they were the length of the brush, which means I could then make them a brush holder drawer, which I did, which he hasn't taken that on board, in fairness.
Right,
which is a bit disappointing. I thought I'd come across a really amazing idea. But anyway, so yeah, I've modified the drawers just so all my brushes are all set out nice and neatly, which is lovely. But even now, I'm at a point where I'm thinking, actually, do you know what? I really need this. This would work really well for me. The same with the paint racks. Mm. I bought the ones that literally rack up in front of you that are on a flat surface. And they work fine. The only thing I found with them was they collect dust like bilio.
Oh, yes.
And they were quite distracting.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this before in another podcast.
Yeah, and I didn't realise that that's what was distracting me.
Colours, pretty colours.
They're on the wall, but they've just gone up by about 20 centimetres. So they're not physically in my eye line, and that has completely changed my model making.
But that's exactly the reason why I had my paints and I put them on the wall behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want them in front of me. Like a little tiny rack that I'm going to put like paints that I'm using at the time. But mostly that should be empty if it's nice and tidy.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting.
And the other thing I noticed as well with them being on the wall is that the temptation to take them off out of the rack and use them and leave them on my bench. I now literally take the paint out, squirt a little bit into what I'm doing, whatever I'm doing, and put it straight back. It doesn't stay on my bench.
Right. Would you forget what paint you use, though?
No, because I know what I'm doing. If I've got something with, like, five different greens, then, okay, fair enough, maybe they won't go straight back in. But they certainly will go back in after I've used them. If I'm using a transparent red for something...
Oh, I do, right.
Transparent red, for example, I know that's what I use, so that, you know.
Yeah.
It's only when it gets a little bit complicated with different shades.
When I'm doing figure painting, I will have a couple of pots that I'm using at the time. And pretty much like you have on your wet palette, you know, things that I put in the wet palette and that will sit on my desk that I know that those are the shades that I've used. And then once I've kind of finished that part of that figure, then they'll get put away.
But what I was doing exactly that. I had enough room on the shelf in front of me once the paint stands were there, where I could line all the paints up along the lip. So I would do exactly that. I would take paint out, I would put it in my wet palette, blah, blah, put it on the lip, get the next one, put it on the lip, next one, put it on the lip. Now, if I was using those colours repeatedly and I had top up, then they would stay on the lip. That's fine. I'm not a problem with that. But the problem I found was, once I'd finished with them, they stay on the lip. And all of a sudden, I've got like 15 along the lip. And I'm quite annoyingly... I don't know. I can't think of what the word is. You know what the word is. All my paints are in paint order by number as best they can be.
Yeah.
So if I take a dozen paints out, it then takes me forever to put them back because I've got to find the right number. I can't just pop them back where I think that's where they went.
Oh, okay.
I have to physically check the numbers.
Like a compulsion to keep it all ordered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's another reason for, because it's out of the way, I take it down, put a little bit on my palette, and I invariably will put it straight back because I know that's where it's going to go.
Well, having that compulsion is fine as long as it doesn't get in the way of things. So, like, you know, the place is on fire. It's like, well,
I'll deal with the fire in a minute. I just need to line these colours up. That's when it comes an issue.
They're going to burn. I at least want them to burn with the labels all facing forward with the right numbers.
What do the firemen think?
And while I'm doing this podcast, I'm literally leaning across and turning them so the labels are facing the right way. That's odd, isn't it?
That's all right. Isn't that like when your mum used to say,
wear your clean underwear in case you get hit by a bus.
Isn't that the same thing?
See, I never understood that statement. Because if a bus is going to hit you, the chances are you will soil. See what I did there? That was very good. So I would have soiled my underwear by the time I'd been hit by the bus. They wouldn't go,
oh, well, that's freshly soiled in freshly cleaned pants.
They wouldn't know any difference, would they?
No, and I don't know why it would matter.
They're not going to say, oh, so-and-so was hit by a bus and it looks like he hasn't changed his pants for 4 weeks, even though he did soil himself.
No, that would be on the report. It wouldn't affect the insurance. It wouldn't affect the outcome of the court either. I don't know why it makes a difference. Maybe it's the doctor thinks more of you. The doctor were like,
I'm going to save this patient. Hang on a minute. They've got unclean underwear on. Maybe I won't try so hard in trying to save their life.
I can't be honest, if the doctor that's trying to save my life is worried about whether I have got soiled underpants or not, quite frankly, he needs to get another job.
Well, yeah, you might not be in a position to argue that at the time.
I'm not going to tell him that at the time while he's trying to save my life. No, of course I won't.
No, that's right. Maybe people know why, but let us know in the comments why we should wear clean underwear. I mean, you know.
And if in your comments you could just point out how we managed to segue from model spaces to clean underwear, that would be really helpful.
I was listening to the Triple P, and I think John Bonani had put the comment in saying hygiene is its own reward. As a part of their podcast. So
okay.
Going down the same vein. I don't think I have any compulsion like that at all. My brain doesn't work that way. I like to see things nice and tidy and lined up and everything else, but I don't find the need to do it myself. When I did put the paint rack up in the shed, I asked my daughter to put all the paints up for me. I said, can you put them all up? Because I know that's the sort of thing she would do well and enjoy. And she put them all in colour order. And she is on the spectrum somewhere, and she did a great job, you know, and they look fantastic. So I'm just going to keep them in that order that they are in. I don't know if they're in number order or not, because you can't see the numbers, but they look nice. If it was me, I'd just chuck them all up.
But see, now, it's funny you should say that, because obviously the paints I'm talking about are model colour. And if anyone has a model colour catalogue of all their colours, they'll note that they are in colour order in the catalogue.
Oh.
The colour order is not the number order of the paint.
Oh.
Now, that just blows my mind. How could you do that?
I guess they developed each colour separately, and then as they developed each, they then numbered it. They didn't develop all their reds at once.
Yeah, I guess that's the case. But, yeah, it's just horrendous. My fantasy...
Here we go. It's a different podcast now.
My fantasy would be to have another little bit more rack space and have the full range. And I would really love it to match the catalogue. But the downside to that is that the fact that the numbers are not in sequence would drive me nuts. I'd have to renumber them.
You could.
I literally would have to renumber the bottles, because it's just like, that doesn't work.
Oh, dear God.
Anyway, insight to James's brain.
Yeah. As long as your clean underwear is on while you're doing it. Do you want to talk about any model shows you're going to?
I've got no shows coming up for me.
Oh, I have.
Oh, wait, go on then.
A Southwest Scale model show.
When is that?
At the Tank Museum. It was on the 10th of September. It's a Saturday, and they have one hell of a lineup on the day. So they've got remote control tanks, they've got remote control boats, they've got remote control airplanes, they've got a paper modeling area, they've got Models for Heroes doing a build a tank, they've got Mig Menes himself doing demonstrations.
Are they?
Yes, they do. He's doing a couple of meet and greets as well. They have got the Conservation, not the Conversation, the Conservation Center open all day, and they're utilizing the mezzanine area so you can see all the vehicles and things. If you do get down there, go over there and have a look, because it's awesome. So I'm not even going to say anything about it, just do it, just go over there and have a good they've got, oh God, they've got more stuff. I'm going to have a look on the website. It'll tell you all about it. But yeah, I will be there.
Will you be giving out goodies?
I might give goodies. Yeah, if someone comes up to me and says, oh, I like your podcast, I'll say, wow, you're the other one. here's a sticker. as I try to do when everyone, I usually have a sticker on me somewhere. Come and say hello. Love to talk to you, chat to you, find out what's wrong with you, why are you listening to us. Telford as well. We got any Telford updates?
Other than that, we will be there, obviously. We will be putting...
Are you going to be there both days?
I'm not sure right now. Possibly. I've said this a couple of times in the podcast, but mainly to try and get our listeners to make sure the message is getting out. I'm going to be putting a post up this week or last week, depending on when I did it, which will be challenging the special interest group tables to have their nuts out. And we may be working on something special for those that take the time and effort.
We are. I was trying to think what it was.
Yeah, we only had that conversation about 5 minutes ago, but yes, we're going to be looking at doing something. That's what I like. It's all rehearsed, you know, scripted and everything.
Is it hell? Well, you can tell when we do the bit, we've written it down, you can say, oh yeah, they've obviously read it out, because we're like,
next time we'll be just making conversation about the other subjects relating to this hobby of ours.
But what you don't realise is that when Malcolm does that like that, Malcolm's really good with the editing and he can speed it up and manipulate it so it sounds like something completely different.
Yeah, have you noticed that, have you?
I had, yeah.
I can do this thing called audio space reduction, right? When you read out the names for Buy Me a Coffee, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
When you read them out, sometimes you kind of get stuck on a word and then there's a bit of a gap.
Yes.
What I do is I select that entire bit and I remove all the dead sound. So you sound like a robot.
What you don't realize is it took me 2.5 hours to read out all those names because I can't read them very well. But yeah, who wants to listen to that for a podcast?
A lot of podcast players let you speed up the audio anyway. Yeah, so removing all the gaps in people's speech is usually quite fun. In fact, what I'll do is in this bit that I'm talking right now, I will remove all of the gaps and then you can hear what it sounds like with that filter on. The other thing I can do is change the pitch and I can grab words from different places and drop them in different things, so... I can get you to say anything I want.
Why not utilize the box? We'll just slip it in. No one will notice. Oh.
So, yeah, Telford's not far away. So, a few months away. Are you going to be putting anything in the competition? Are you going to be displaying anything on your... Taking anything with you?
Ah, do you know what? I was asked this. I was asked this the other day, funny enough. And I was asked whether the Moosaru build would be going. I don't know. Is the honest answer.
Well, it depends what table you put it on, huh? Where you've got space.
Well, with the Moosaru Cup, I can just take it to any table and just slip it in. No one will notice.
I think IPMS Plymouth might notice.
Yeah, all right, maybe.
Or the Tornado Sig. It's like, hang on a minute.
Yeah, that's not a tornado. You say that's not a tornado. Are you sure? Are you sure you know what you're talking about? No, I don't know. It's the honest answer. There is a possibility I might. If I'm there for the weekend, then I might enter a couple into the competition.
Yes, do it.
Just for fun. Not because I think they're particularly worthy.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely do it for fun. It was interesting, and I think it, again, was the Triple P. They said that, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was Mr. Murphy said something about putting stuff into competitions. You're not with the model anymore. You've kind of left it alone, and you're not with it. So anyone has any questions, they can't talk to you about it, you know, and he prefers to have it in front of him and not bother with the competition. I thought that was very interesting. I kind of feel the same way.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, if I was in a particular group and having the model on the table and being at the table, etc., and talking about my model, yeah, that would give me quite a lot of joy discussing the ins and outs of how what I did and didn't do.
That
was my first experience of competition, wasn't it? It was the fact that I put it in to see what other people thought of it and whether it looked out of place.
Yeah, and what happened?
And I felt like I was a real bad stalker by basically standing near my model trying to overhear everybody else's conversations who weren't talking about my model anyway. So a bit deflating.
We all need feedback. We all need, when, especially when you put something in a competition, you need some sort of way of knowing whether, you know, how you are doing.
Yeah, this is what I was saying to someone. Their standard of work is worthy of showing off. And I used the phrase that me and Malcolm have used previously, that you shouldn't be selfish as to not display it. But I was trying to persuade them to put it into a competition just for fun. If something happens, that's a bonus. But if it doesn't, it doesn't matter, because you've already achieved the goal in which you set out, which A, was to share your model, and B, was to put your model amongst your peers and say, that looks like a model that belongs within that group. It doesn't look out of place.
Are you trying to convince somebody to enter a competition, or are you trying to convince someone to just put their model on a table?
Both.
Well, you can offer to pay for them to enter that competition, can't you?
I could do, yes.
Nothing off their nose, then?
I possibly could, but the problem is the person doesn't feel confident enough that their work is worthy of being on a competition table, and they have already displayed once before.
Yeah.
And were absolutely stoked at the amount of comments and positiveness that you got from it.
Right. Okay.
So it's a case of sort of saying to them, look, you did that with a bit of G-ing. I'm now G-ing you to put something in a competition. And the only goal that you want to do is to take from it the fact that that model doesn't look like a five-year-old did it.
No offense to all five-year-olds.
Sometimes you can put your model in amongst other models. You, at the very minimum, you can look at it and go, yeah, it looks like a model in amongst lots of models. It's no different than posting your work on Facebook. You can sit back and go, well, do you know what? My post looks like it should belong on this page. And that's all I want them to see, because I think that would make a massive boost to them personally.
Gotcha. I guess you can't force them, can you?
I'm not going to.
No.
And yeah, I could offer to pay for it, to enter it if I need to. I think that would be making them obliged to do it. I want them to make that decision for themselves.
That's not the reason they're not doing it, is because they can't afford it.
What they're worried about is their work would look out of place, and I know for a fact it doesn't.
Cool, brilliant. Thank you very much for chatting with me. Thanks very much for listening.
Having enough room to spread out a little helps you have a relaxing experience of your model making. Not feeling under pressure to work clean and tidy enables you to see the bigger picture.
A workspace which is organized with tools close at hand benefits your mindset and avoids those stressful moments of wondering where you stuck your tool, but also can lead to inspiration and progress.
Next time, we'll just be making conversation about other subjects relating to this daft hobby of ours.
You have been listening, if you've got this far, to Just Making Conversation with
James Giffins
and Malcolm Childs.
Follow us on Facebook, where we post photos, updates and other nonsense.
Find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, Google Podcasts, eBay and all the others. Tumblr. Pets at Home.
Oh dear. Let us know what you've been just making and what your thoughts are on this conversation in this episode.
Thank you to the following supporters from buymeacoffee.com.
Ninja//
JMC Podcast.
Paint All the Minis Peter, Brad, Warren, Tim, Black Rifle, John, Julian, Chuck, Mark, Bakowie, Simon the Jersey Gent, Steve, Lee, Costas, Mark, Ray, Neil, Mike, Robert, Andrew, Drew, John, Mike, Jeff, Richard, Lynn, Gordon, and six others. And I didn't stumble on the names. I'm so proud of myself.
You know, if it was me, I would buy ourselves a coffee and I would put something, and the name like IP Daily or Roland Slide or Ivor Biggin. I'm surprised no one's done that yet. Oh, do you know what we could do that with another podcast? No, because the Plastic Posse, they read out their patrons. If you do show your support, leave your name so we can paint the roll of honour on the tail of the next episode.
Bye.
Goodbye. Apples and pears, straight up.
Roll up.
I was brought up in a Thames in a shoebox with 18 sisters.
Shoebox? Jesus Christ, do you think I was rich or something? Shoebox? Thames? More like a puddle.
You had a puddle? Luxury. All we had to eat every night was a walnut. And that was after Father beat us with a stick, if we were lucky. You had walnuts? Huh? You had heaven.
I love Monty Python.
Yeah, me too.